Y'a quelqu'un?
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our review of Amour.
Y'a quelqu'un?
Maman?
Tout à l'heure, quand je suis entrée, je me suis rappelé comment je vous écoutais toujours faire l'amour quand j'étais petite. Ça me donnait le sentiment que vous vous aimiez et qu'on resterait toujours ensemble.
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a?
Non, it's not okay. Qu'est-ce qui se passe?
Tu ne vas quand même pas malmener ton image sur tes vieux jours?
Je m'en garderai bien. Mais c'est quoi mon image?
Tu es un monstre parfois.
Non mais dis-moi, qu'est-ce qu'il y a? T'es devenu fou?
Assieds-toi.
Non mais je veux pas m'asseoir. Qu'est-ce qui se passe ici?
All right, everybody, you were just listening to the trailer for Amour, and the story is as follows. Retired music teachers George and Anne have spent their lives devoted to their careers and to each other. Their relationship faces its greatest challenge when Anne suffers a debilitating stroke. Though George himself suffers from the aches of old age, he bravely ignores his own discomfort to take care of his wife and is determined to keep his promise to her that she never go back to the hospital. The film is starring Jean-Louis Trintignant, Emmanuel Riva, Isabelle Huppert, and it is written and directed by Michael Haneke. Here to join me today for this 2012 retrospective podcast review, I have Eve O'Day.
Bonjour tout le monde.
Sarah Clements.
Bonjour tout le monde.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Two.
Two.
Dan Baer.
Bonjour tout le monde.
Should I be speaking a different language for this? And Tom O'Brien.
Hi.
Hello, everyone. It's good that we're starting off with some laughter here, because this is a very, very heavy movie. Am I right?
Yeah.
Lord.
So, Amour is a movie that premiered at the 2012 Cannes Film Festival, and that's actually kind of part of the reason why we are reviewing it now. This year's Cannes Film Festival is actually just kicking off this week, 10 years later, and this movie won the Palme d'Or. It also gave him his greatest award season success, being nominated for Best Picture, the film being nominated for Best Actress, Screenplay, Director, and also having appearances in other awards such as the César Awards, the BAFTAs, and so on and so forth. It was one of the most critically acclaimed films of 2012. And in a lot of ways, while its depiction of two elderly people who are going through really, really tough times and nearing the end that we all at some point in our lives will eventually face. Hopefully we all live very, very long lives to get there. It is still a very honest and brutally so honest film that captures something that I very rarely have seen other films really put to screen before in such a convincing way. In a manner that just has such a profound impact on you. And so it's for that reason that since 2012, I've never watched this movie again until now. This has only been my second time watching Amour, because it's not a movie that you that you go, oh, it's a Sunday afternoon, let me casually just put on Amour. Not that kind of movie. I am very interested, though, in talking about it with all of you, because I do think that even outside of what's going on in the movie itself, I do think it also invites conversation about how we feel about the way the characters go about the decisions they have to make in this movie, and also maybe if there's any real-life experiences that we've had with other members of our family or friends that have gone through similar situations. And I do think it's important to talk about these things as we confront our own mortality, if you will. So it's a very, very heavy movie. But with that said, I do want to get some general thoughts from some people here. And I believe, if I'm understanding this correctly, Eve, I think this was your first time viewing the movie recently. So tell me, what did you think of Amour?
Oh, yeah. I did not watch this film when it came out because I was a little young. So I don't think I would have cared for it very much. Since then, I've become very familiar with Haneke's work. I absolutely love The Piano Teacher. I think that's such a great film. That's so weird. And it's so wonderfully carried by Isabelle Huppert's central performance. I think Funny Games is pretty great. It's very unusual, and it's a very sort of unique way of telling a home invasion story that I don't think any other filmmaker has ever really done in the same way since then. And Cachet also, which is just so uncomfortable and so brutal and so unflinching. And I kind of think that's the main word that I would use to describe all of Haneke's films, and Amour is just completely unflinching. Even if in Amour, he's not necessarily presenting you with any gratuitous violence or brutality in the sort of violent sense. It's just, he refuses to pull the camera away when people are getting uncomfortable. He refuses to gloss over the more ugly side of what he's presenting. And this film in particular just really presents and is sort of criticizing the fact that we generally as a society don't have a sort of comfortable relationship with death, even though it's the most, you know, the frankest thing in the world, except it's the most guaranteed thing in the world except for taxes. And it's just, he's saying, isn't this so ridiculous that we all have to go through this? We've all seen other people go through this, and we're still so unable to deal with it on a personal level and on a familial level. So even though this isn't his, by any means, his most, you know, violent, sadomasochistic film, it is arguably his most difficult to watch, I would say. I do think it's very good, so that's to say.
Yeah, I think that it being so difficult to watch is tied directly to what you're talking about here, Eve, and that it is a movie that probably hits too close to home for so many people. Even if you have not gone through something like this, whether it be up close in person, seeing maybe a grandparent or anyone else go through a similar situation, even if you haven't experienced it firsthand, to even just see it in such an uncompromising manner, the mental preparation that the movie gives to its audience to make them aware and realize, hey, you may not have experienced this yet, but trust me, at some point you will. And I agree with you that that is something that we are so reluctant as a society, as a species, to want to confront early on, until, you know, most of us want to put it off and put it off and put it off and don't want to even think about it until the day eventually arrives. And I do think it is beneficial in a way to, like I said, have these conversations, expose ourselves to these realities, and hopefully be able to learn and prepare from them. Sarah, we're going to go over to you now. What did you think of Amour?
So like Eve, this was the first time I'd watched it as well, because when it came out, I was just starting my first year of university, you know, future death anyway. But movies like Amour that tackle, you know, old age always manage to terrify me more than even like the best, most frightening horror films, because they show our future, as we've sort of been discussing. And it's one that seems very bleak and where everything is out of control. But they're also films of the subject are also like really essential, I think, because like coming of age films, they accomplish similar things. You know, coming of age films make us reflect and perhaps come to accept things we experienced in our youth, whereas films that deal with old age make us reflect and perhaps accept things that will happen to us in the future. And I think Emmanuel Riva's performance as a former pianist who basically loses all control of her body and mind is amazing and affecting. And at a certain point, you really feel like she's playing two different people in the film, you know, one being the whole person and another a kind of shell of her former self. And she shows how difficult getting older is. And the supporting cast is also incredible, because they also show how difficult seeing their spouse and mother getting older is too. And, you know, as everyone's been saying, it's a tough watch, but I think it's one that sticks with you for sure.
Hey there.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dan Baer.
So I mean every single bit of this in a unbelievably pure way that I had sort of toyed with, like, joking about a little before I watched this again, and then watching it again, I was like, no, that actually is 100% accurate. This is the greatest love story of the 21st century.
Bold words. Bold words.
I know, but it is also a bold movie coupled with two bold performances. Frankly, this movie affected me greatly the first time I saw it. It felt so real and raw in a way that most films are not. And watching it again, which is not something that I wanted to do ever, but, you know, I felt like I should. It just proved that it's so great, this movie. Do I get a little frustrated with it at points with the deliberate pacing and the very, like, European art cinema aesthetic and the thing with the pigeon? Yes.
See, now I actually thought that would be, like, up your alley.
Which part? The thing with the pigeon? The pigeon is sort of like my maybe that was a bridge too far moment. Like, not just because, like, you didn't need that. It's just an extra layer of symbolism that, like, I get why you want to have it there, but the rest of your story is telling us that already. But other than that, I mean, these are two of the finest performances that have maybe ever been committed to film. And even though it is unbelievably bleak and depressing, it is also incredibly beautiful. And I don't think there's another movie that I could say that about.
Tom O'Brien, we now come over to you.
Well, Matt, like you, I hadn't seen it since its release in 2012 for the same reason. I can't think of popping it in for a fun night watching movies. But seeing it again this afternoon for the second time, it hit me much harder this time than it did the first time. You know, stop and think of those of us who saw it back then. 10 years have passed.
Yeah.
And we're all in different places now in our lives, and the people whom we love and who are surrounding us have gotten 10 years older as well. And I know now I find there are people facing the same situation whom I know, who I love. It even is happening to my next door neighbor right now.
Oh, wow.
It's enormously difficult to see lovely, loving people have to go through this. So when I see Isabelle Huppert trying to get her parents into a nursing home, because that's really going to be the best thing for them, and they resist, I can see my friends trying to talk their parents into it, and almost to a person. It hasn't worked. They want to live and die in their homes. And seeing this couple go through much of the same, it is now kind of, I can only see Amour through that lens now. And I'm never really going to quite see the film that I saw 10 years ago the same way again, because I see it all around me right now.
Yeah, I definitely hear you in terms of how the difference of 10 years can change one's perspective of this movie. You know, 10 years ago, I was 22 years old. And I will be completely honest with you all, like, the subject matter of this movie is so far removed from the mind of a 22-year-old that, like, I don't think I could even really fully appreciate it 10 years ago. Here I am now, 32 years old, and even though I've got hopefully a long way to go until I, you know, experience the things that George and Anne are experiencing in this movie, it definitely hit me a lot harder, and I have a greater appreciation for it now than I did back then as well. So this is easily, I think, one of the best movies of 2012. I think that kind of goes without saying. And it's interesting because there have been other movies that have also explored some of the themes that this movie is tackling and some of the subject matter and so on and so forth. But this is one that has truly broken through and resonated with people. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think a lot of it has to do with Haneke and also like where he was at, like in his career when this movie performed and the types of films that he had given us before this. Eve, you were mentioning that earlier, and how this in many ways felt like a bit of a departure, but at the same time, so fitting with the rest of his filmography. And also too, I don't know if anyone else here could speak to this, but I know Dan, myself, and Tom, we all just saw Gaspar Noé's film Vortex recently. And he too, like Haneke in a lot of ways, is a filmmaker who's very uncompromising. And this was a movie that, once again, very different than some of the other ones that he's released beforehand. But when you see it, it does still feel like a Gaspar Noé film in a lot of ways. however, that movie did have some problems with it that I, you know, just from a comparison standpoint, maybe also appreciate more on this viewing. So seeing like other filmmakers, you know, try to also tackle this, you know, now I kind of like look at Amour and I go, man, that's kind of the gold standard now. You know, like the bar has been set and all other filmmakers have to, you know, rise up to that level of quality if they want to present any of these topics in their stories. With that said, there are a couple things I want to explore here, but maybe some of them are not so much directly aspects of the movie, but maybe just more so us having conversations as people, as individuals here. I want to know, you know, Anne's reluctance to want to go into a hospice or a nursing home. That is something that obviously is a very personal like decision that sometimes is rooted in pride, sometimes is also just a simple feeling of wanting to be in an environment that you feel protected in, you know, your own home. And I'm just curious if that is something that, you know, do you guys have like any thoughts on whether it's someone that you know that has gone through a similar situation, or if it's something that you have even thought about, like, oh, if that was me, if I was like in Anne's, you know, shoes, what would I decide to do in that, like in that given situation?
Asking tough questions today. My grandma's in a lodge thing. Like they don't cook, but they have their own sort of space. But I think some people when they get old, they just sort of accept that I can't do all this stuff on my own anymore and I have to go somewhere. But I understand wanting the comfort of your home, especially when you deteriorate as quickly as Anne does. Like it's really unexpected. And I can understand that like wanting like going to like a hospice would be like such a big change. So I understand why she would want to stay in the comfort of her home with her husband. I feel like I would also want that as well for me, because going into a new environment, especially when you're so elderly, is scary, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think as much as it's about her reluctance to go to any sort of care facility, it's also about Georges' reluctance to let her go. Like, they've lived so many decades together. And he obviously wants to respect her wishes, but I think he also just wants to keep living with his wife for as long as he can. Because the, I don't know, I think less about, the film is less about like your own personal aging scenario and more about you having to witness other people go through that.
Yeah. And I think that's also tying in with what Dan was saying earlier about this being, you know, the greatest love story ever told.
I mean, it is called Amour.
Exactly.
Big title.
Hey, everyone. Sorry to interrupt. But this is a preview of our 2012 review of Amour here on the Next Best Picture podcast. In order to get the full over hour and a half long review, you will have to head on over to our Patreon under Next Best Picture, where for $1 minimum a month, you'll get the rest of this review and other exclusive podcast content from us as well. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.